Welcome back, guys. 204 DGS on KMOX. Happy Friday. Our buddy Tom Ackerman joins us from Jupiter. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, what's up?
Not too much, buddy. Big news today, right?
Yeah, big stuff. I mean, you just heard in news, so I won't play the Mosellock press conference as you just heard it at the top of the hour in the news, but he did explain that Ollie Marmol, the Cardinals manager, is receiving a contract extension through 2026. Part of his reasoning is that he didn't want a lame duck manager. He didn't want to start a season and then, let's say, they get off to a bad start. Everyone's looking over their shoulder. There's a disconnect. He wanted to ensure that his manager is going to be in place. And they also feel like they have the players that can elevate him to where they were before. He won a division in 2022. So that was part of it. And also, you know, they do believe in continuity. They don't want to cause some sort of disruption. But I think the biggest thing was he was entering the final year of his contract, and they thought about it, talked about it, and said, this isn't right. Like, we should not be starting a season with him still hanging around with contract status up in the air. Let's ink him to a two-year extension and go about our business and try to go win.
Yeah, you know what? I wouldn't have thought of that, but when you say it, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, it does. And, you know, I talked to Bill DeWitt about it. Here's a little bit of that. So this is the Cardinals chairman. He's ultimately the signs off on it. So he's the boss, he's the owner, and here's what we had to say. Chance to spend a couple of minutes with Cardinals chairman Bill DeWitt Jr. after an announced contract extension for manager Oliver Marmol. You have been through a number of these. How did you lead to this one with Ollie?
Well, over a period of time, Mo and I talked about, you know, how Ollie would be harder to, you know, be on that last year of your contract, not knowing your future, and you know, our plans were to have him continue, so we thought we might as well make it official.
And you did, and we have his family here, and certainly all the players lined up behind him. It's a neat visual, but also part of that is you do want performance. Continuity is important to you, but performance is something that you have a standard set.
Yeah, no question about it. We from day one, since I've been involved, we've stressed winning and, you know, building from within, and Ollie's very good at that. And, you know, as I said, he is a very young guy to be in the position he's been and all the jobs he's had. I mean, bench coach is a big job, and at his age, that was very impressive. He's the youngest manager in baseball now, and there's a reason for it. He climbed the ladder pretty quickly because he's very knowledgeable baseball-wise and knows how to run a team.
Last thing for you. Do you think that you have the right group in that clubhouse behind him, or is this the group of players that you think can make a difference here and get back to winning?
I do. I think Mo's done a really good job, or did a very good job in the offseason, getting veteran presence, and not just veterans, but those who are competitive and earn to win, and I think we got that with the ones that we've signed, and I feel really good about the culture of the clubhouse.
Always great to be with you down here. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Well, it's always nice when the boss stops and talks to you. There's Bill DeWitt Jr., the chairman of the team, giving us a quick interview, and I also spoke with Ollie, but let me make a comment there. A lot of fans aren't going to like this. I mean, they are down on the team. The team was 20 games under 500 last year, and people were down on Oliver Marmol. But I will remind him that, you know, the greatest manager on earth is not walking through that door, nor is, let's say, Yadier Molina or Albert Pujols, mm-hmm. both of whom have shown an interest in becoming managers someday. You know, that's going to take some time. I mean, they're not just going to take over and become a big league manager. So anybody who thought that that was going to happen next year, you know, let's slow down a little bit. Ollie's signed through 2026. He's the manager of the team. And also, Dave, I think that it's a message to the players from the very top saying, you know, we believe in this guy. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. There's your manager. He's your manager for the next 2-3 seasons. So go get it. And we brought you here for a reason. So we back him, and so should you.
Tom, I like that last question that you asked Mr. DeWitt. Let me throw it back at you. Just overall, comprehensively, move for move, do you feel like the right guys are in the clubhouse to get back to winning?
I think to get back to winning, yes. I think to win a World Series, no. I don't think that this team right now, as it's constructed, would be considered a team that's going to go win a World Series. I think that they are a team that can be competitive in the division and be very interesting as we get close to the trade deadline. And then I think it's a three-team race, Cards, Cubs, Reds, and the team that makes the biggest move at the deadline could move ahead and get themselves in position to go down the stretch, win the division, and get to a World Series. And that move would have to be, I think, a co-ace to go along with Sonny Gray. But for right now, yeah, I think it's a good team. I think they have spent money wisely. I think they did what they said they were going to do. They bulked up pitching. They added like 10 pitchers in the offseason. That's a lot. And right now, they do have money still to spend. They are not going to do what the Mets or Padres did last year, spend $300 million-plus on a payroll and risk falling apart, which both teams did. So, you know, they're not in a position either as a medium-sized market to start throwing money around either. I can't remember the last time they ever did it, ever. So they kind of are the same every year. They always want to hang around. They always want to be competitive. This was the plan last year, and they took a huge gamble that their rotation would be able to stay together, and it did not. I think this time around, they have a little better backup plan.
Tom, I'm going to mix my metaphors here, and it's either going to really work or really not. But is the Cardinals approach that you just described, let's be there at the end hanging around and see if we can be the one to come out of it, is that sort of like the dump and chase strategy in hockey?
It's an interesting way to look at it, yes. I do think that they have a mix of veterans that usually when this team has won and won big, those are the type of players that they had around. I really felt like last year there was a huge disconnect on this team. Talented, yes, but not enough leadership, not enough people to tell these younger players what they need to do to be great. It's one thing to have talent. It's another to take it to a different level. You know, I think that Goldschmidt and Arenado are two tremendous players who maybe their greatest skill is staying on the field. I mean, they are always there. They're durable. We know how talented they are. We get that. But how do they end up playing 144 to 155 games every year? I mean, they do. So that's a skill that you can teach. And now they bring in some other names like Brandon Crawford, Matt Carpenter kind of work in the background, Lynn Gibson, Michaelis would be considered a veteran today. Steven Matz is still trying to be one of those. But they have these voices now and these players who can show what it takes to win and win big and, you know, perhaps deliver in the clutch when you need it. They've sort of been there, done that. Like Brandon Crawford's not going to go win a gold glove or chase down a silver slugger. But can he get a big hit in a big moment? Absolutely. Of course he can. And that's why he's backing up Mason Wynn, who is the superior athlete, superior player overall.
So, Tom, as you well know, in 2024, people love to talk about the intangibles. They love to talk about vibe and energy. And I think sometimes that's overblown, but not for the Cardinals. Last year, you had the debacle with Contreras, and you had Arenado giving some interviews saying that the energy in the clubhouse, maybe the young guys took over a little too much and the veterans didn't step up enough. How, I know it's spring training, it's not regular season yet, but how is the vibe and the energy so far down there?
Well, I think it's a 180 because last year none of those guys were here except Contreras. Contreras was here. He stayed back. He's like, yeah, I'm going to stay back. I'm not going to go play for Venezuela in the World Baseball Classic. Who's with me? And like 17 guys are in the World Baseball Classic and he's catching. And there are a couple of pitchers here that he ended up with in the regular season, but everybody was gone. Wainwright, Michaelis, Arenado, Goldschmidt, you go right down the line. They were all gone, and you know, not only is that not good for his development as a player, and he had a lot to learn, but it's not good for chemistry. Where is everybody? No one was here, and you know, I think that had a lot to do with it. And you know, you had a bunch of young guys sitting around looking at their phones when the older guys could have, like they are now, guided them along. Like, hey, dude, let me take you to the cage and show you what I like to do. Or, hey, I noticed something about your delivery. You're tipping your pitches. Let me. My name's Lance Lynn. I've been around forever. Let me show you how this works. And that is very helpful. Sonny Gray is probably the biggest acquisition of all. He's a mid-30s guy who's been through it all. He's second in the Cy Young last year. They respect him. He's a big-time pitcher. And he has guided, let's say, Matthew Liberatore, a guy who seemed kind of drifting out there, wasn't really sure what he was going to be. And he's a very confident pitcher now. I don't know how far he'll take it, but he certainly seems more confident than he was last year. So I do think from that standpoint, the whole vibe of the clubhouse, I think it's much different. Yeah. And I was here last year. I saw it for myself.
So if I had my choice, and I think you would agree, I would have Newt Barr and I would have Edmund and I would have Sonny Gray. But if we can't have those guys, I really hope that Victor Scott gets to stay up and gets to play because he's just so exciting.
Yeah, he's a total stud. He really is. He's stole 94 bases last year. He can run. He's got, but he's a good hitter that will have to adjust to big league pitching. His glove is excellent. Dave, in the minor leagues, they give out gold gloves, but they only give out one per position for the entire minor leagues. So he won. He was one of three outfielders in the entire minor league system to win a gold glove. He probably is their best defensive outfielder right
now.
Wow. So, you know, he comes in and can do that, run the bases, provide energy. That's what you need. I mean, baseball is a sport where, yeah, you need great hitters, you need great pitching, you need great defense, but you need energy. You need somebody who can change the vibe of the game. Vince Coleman did that. Lou Brock did that. You know, for a period of time, I think the Cardinals have had some exciting players who, you know, David Eckstein comes to mind, who wasn't the most talented guy in the world, but he could get a big hit and get the jolt of energy into the place. Victor Scott, though, has this incredible speed and ability to change a baseball game, and that is different. And hopefully he gets that opportunity. If he does, that means, Dave, that he's going to play every single day. But if he doesn't play every single day, he'll play every day in the minors, if that makes sense. So if Tommy Edman eventually comes back and Newt Barr eventually comes back, that's great, but that'll mean that Victor Scott has to go back to the minors. But, you know, in 1985, Vince Coleman came up, they put him on the team, and suddenly they couldn't get rid of him. I mean, they had to keep him around. So Jordan Walker's your right fielder. Left field, center field, still up in the air. Burleson, Donovan, both can play in left. Victor Scott, Dylan Carlson can play in center. And if I was being honest right now, even though Carlson's the most experienced player, Scott's the one that gets you excited. I mean, he has a much higher upside. I almost feel like we've seen what Carlson can give. And so the pressure's on Dylan, I think, to do something.
So I don't know 10% of what you and Wheels and Matt and guys like that know, but it seems to me that you expect Arenado and Goldie and people like that, Sonny Gray, to perform. And I think they will. You know, Arenado's not going to have two off years in a row, I don't think. It seems to me that Gorman and Burleson and guys like that, that they're a real key. That if they have great years, and Carlson, if they play at or above their potential, that could really be what turns a season from mediocre to very good.
I agree with you. I think that, and let me know how much time we have, because I will play just the beginning of my chat with Ollie just to circle back to the biggest story
all the time
of the day
you need,
for
Tommy.
People just joining us. That Ollie got a contract extension today. But to answer your question, absolutely. Goldie and Arenado are not getting any younger. Now, the window here is closing on how good they're going to be for a period of time. I mean, Arenado is in his 12th season, and Goldschmidt's been around a long time also. And so, you know, who's the next core of players? And so you do have to take a step forward. I actually like the fact that Jordan Walker, we just had this whole conversation about outfielders. A year ago, we were all wondering, is Jordan Walker going to make the team? Boy, this 21-year-old, he's really something. Now he's the one guy that you say, yeah, he's good. He's your right fielder. Okay, anyway, what else do we have to discuss? You know, so that's exciting. Walker's in right. He's made a quick ascension. Nolan Gorman, he's your second baseman, along with Brendan Donovan. That's important. Those two need to take the next step, and then we see what Mason Wynn can give you in a full season of the big leagues. He will have some ups and downs, but there's no denying his ability to play defense at shortstop. And then, you know, some other younger players that could start to make a difference, whether it's in the pitching staff, in the bullpen, Yvonne Herrera behind the plate, if something were to happen to Wilson Contreras. There is another group coming, but it's important that they do get big contributions from them right now. And then you never know. You know, this kid, Thomas Sejesi, that they acquired from the Rangers, people just sort of looked past it at the trade deadline. Well, he goes on, wins the Texas League MVP, and then, you know, you look at the video of him, you're like, oh, he's a hitter. And then he comes down here, he's hitting, spraying the ball all over the place, hits a home run. He can play third, short, second. Who knows? I mean, Brendan Donovan kind of did the same thing 2 years ago. He sort of appeared out of nowhere, and suddenly we consider him to be a veteran player. So those unexpected contributions from younger players are very important, but the growth of Walker and Gorman and Wynn, not to mention a few other young guys, is very, very important for the future. They are banking on that being the next core.
You want to play that sound from Ollie?
Yeah, here's a little bit of Ollie. This is me talking to Ollie Marmol while his six-year-old daughter is hanging on his right leg. She was very excited for her dad receiving a contract extension just a little while ago here at the complex.
It feels great. It really does. I'm extremely excited and thankful for the opportunity. Like I said, this is by far the best job in all of baseball, if not in all of sports, and I take that serious, and it's to be able to call St. Louis home for several years has been fun. The fact that we get to continue to do that is exciting for my family, and man, to lead that clubhouse and to get the support from Mr. DeWitt and from Mo in them making it clear that I'm the one they want in their leading for years to come is also meaningful.
Bill DeWitt did say in the press conference two things. They believe in continuity. They also believe in performance. That is important. What does that mean to you when you hear him say those two things together?
That's what you want to hear. You want to hear that they value continuity and messaging and in a staff, but they also value making sure that you win. And that's what the fans care about is the, making sure that we continue to win ball games. And our goal is to bring another World Series back to St. Louis. I'm passionate about that. It's good to get rid of the distraction of what happens halfway through the year, next year. So the fact that that's behind us and we get to move forward, I'm excited about it.
Did you wonder about the extension? I mean, was it distracting you in any way?
Man, you try to set it aside and not think of it, but you're human and you kind of go back and forth as to what if this doesn't work out the way you want it to. And at the end of the day, man, I want to be a Cardinal for a long time. I value this organization a ton. I value our ownership. I value Mo and his group and just being able to come in and they make it, they care about their people, and that's not everywhere. So I want to make sure I do a good enough job where they want to keep me here for a long time.
These decisions are also impacting family. Tell us about your family and settling into St. Louis and how that must feel for Amber and the group.
Yeah, just to see them here while we did the press conference was fun. I mean, they absolutely, when I say love St. Louis, like, we're down here in Jupiter, and my six-year-old who's right behind me right now is, I mean, she can't stop talking about getting back to St. Louis. That's what they call home. That's what where they're comfortable. The support there for Amber and my two kids has been unbelievable. So to be able to come home and let them know that we're going to be there for a longer period of time is exciting. It was great news.
You won a division in 2022. We all know what happened in 23. How do you get back to it, Ollie? I mean, I know I ask you this all the time, but what does a winning team look like? How do you get back to winning with the St. Louis Cardinals?
We have the right group in there, and we're going to continue to be extremely dedicated to the small details of this game that have allowed us to win that extra game or extra two games every season, running the bases well, playing good defense. Like, we're passionate about the things that have this organization has been anchored to for a very long time. And to your point, we need to get back to that, and we will get back to it. And this vote of confidence from our owner and Mo is important to me. So, yeah, we're going to stay committed to playing the game the way our fans have been used to seeing us play the game. And you have my word on that.
Thank you and congratulations.
Appreciate it, Tom. Thank you.
Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol on KMOX.
All right, so there you go. He said, you have my word.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. I mean, it's this is one of the biggest stages in sports. St. Louis Cardinals manager has one of the most important jobs, I think. So, big day.
Tommy, we got to run, but I had to tell you one last thing. A couple weeks ago, whenever you were calling that preseason game, I was with my mom, and 97-year-old Frances Glover, who's literally been listening to the Cardinals on KMOX since she was 14 years old, I said, hey, Mom, that's my pal, Tom Ackerman, calling the game. Swear to God, here's what she said. She said, really? She said, I like him. He's calming and exciting at the same time, so you don't get much higher praise than that. Just want to let you know that.
Wow. That is sweet. I know that that's an honest answer. So, wow, thank you. That is very nice. God bless her.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thanks, buddy. See you soon.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. So, my buddy Tim Nesbitt, the owner of Triton Exteriors, is here. I liked this guy before. Now I love him. We've been talking barbecue for the last 8 minutes. We're both barbecue nerds.
Yes,
so, no surprise, no coincidence that Tim is on today after all the storms last night, because so many of you were hit with hail and high winds and straight winds, and you have damage to your roofs or whatever it happens to be, and now you have to call your insurance company, and what do you do, and what do you tell them, and do you call Tim first? Call the insurance company first. What if you get up on the roof and they say that it's pre-existing XYZ? So take it away, man. What do people need to know about what happened yesterday?
Well, they definitely need to have somebody come out and take a look at their roof and find out before they call their insurance company.
Yeah, why is that? I've always heard that, like, if you call them, that's a claim or something like that.
Yeah, it'll set off a claim. They'll start a claim automatically, and sometimes they'll insurance companies will use that. They use it as a checklist to kind of ding you. I wouldn't say ding,
right,
but they monitor.
These, like, are, hey, claim makers.
Yeah. They'll start kind of doing that. So I usually recommend call us ahead of time. Have us come out. It's free. It's not a big deal. We jump up there and let you know what your odds and your chances are.
Yeah.
You know, I've done well over 5,000 claims over the 12 years easily, and I know instantly. I like to give percentages and tell people, and then I'll walk you through the process at that point. We'll go down and call the insurance company together, or you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
A lot of people like to do it online nowadays.
So not to get too in the weeds, but I've always been fascinated by this. I had a job a couple of summers putting on roofs, so at least I've been on roofs, but I've always wondered, like, when you get up there, what are you looking for? What looks like a good claim, and what's like, I'm not so sure.
Okay. So what we're looking for is that they have what we call a square or test square. So up there towards the ridge, the peak of your home,
yeah,
we're going to go 10 foot wide, 10 foot deep, and make a big square box.
Mm-hmm.
And insurance companies are looking anywhere, depending on the age of your roof, older it is, the less hail it needs, but generally 6 to 10 hail hits on each major side of your roof, so the front and the back.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what those hail hits will look like, It will look like a marble has hit your shingles. It'll knock out all the granules. It'll be nice and round,
mm-hmm,
and it'll look like a little like you see in like on a moon.
Okay,
where the asteroids have hit those little crater. Literally, it'll look like that. So, and then we will test that, make sure that it broke the mat, the backing of the shingle, and because that's what the adjuster is going to be looking for. And I'll make sure you have, depending on the age, we have enough of those up there. And I'll take pictures for you and show you. If you want to get up and you're able to get under yourself, which we don't always recommend because I don't want anybody to get hurt. Mm-hmm. If they're not used to climbing roofs or ladders, you know, certainly call us. But if you do get up there, that's what you're looking for. They're pretty obvious, you know.
What when you get up there, because this happens all the time, storm blows through and the insurance company will get up there and say, like, nope, doesn't qualify. What typically do they say? Is it just the absence of that, or is it a different type of impression that they see and they go, no, this is too old, or this is pre-existing or something?
Yeah, a lot of times they'll say it wasn't, they don't think it's hail. So I will have to prove that to them or show them. They'll go off age. They'll say it's wear and tear. I love, mm-hmm, to use the word wear and tear.
Yeah.
Hey, you've been walking on your roofs, but, you know, cleaning out leaves. You've been doing this. This looks like, or somebody dropped a hammer whenever they did the roof. They come up with a lot of stuff. So that's where I come in as an advocate for you and help point out that, no, this is the way this is a true hail hit. And if that adjuster really holds his ground, we could always request another adjuster.
Okay.
We don't agree with this gentleman, we can get someone else out there. It's a little bit of a process. They don't like doing it, but, you know, they will do it, and we just have to go to bat for you on that.
So. Are they typically pretty fair? Like, do you typically agree when you get up there?
Most of the time, it's pretty rare that, I have to get into what we call a gentleman's argument up there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody's kicking anybody's ladder down before the other one gets down,
right,
you know, or anything like that. But no, it's usually most of the time most people are pretty good, but you just don't know who you're going to get. You know, I always tell, like, the homeowners that you got the adjuster who's trying to add a chapter to his book and take that vacation to Hawaii, and then you got the guy who's pretty understanding.
He's doing their job.
Doing their job and fair.
Yeah.
Most of the time. I would say 90% of the time, they're pretty fair.
So let's talk about storm chasers, which we have to do. Yeah. Tell me, is it more prevalent than it's been in the past even?
Always, always, always. Yes, please beware. Beware of door knockers. Beware the out-of-town guys, because they were already here last night before the storm hit. They hit my neighborhood, actually.
Wow.
So they know when it's coming. They're following the storms, hence storm chasers. So they'll come up from Texas, most of them, Nebraska, different places like that. They will try and get into a company like with me, because a lot of the vendors won't sell to them because they will run up a bill and go to another state.
Gotcha.
And they do the same thing with customers. So they'll get a half a house done or take your first check, you know, or whatever the situation may be. Their salespeople are really good and really aggressive. But definitely look out for that. So, however, now, with that being said, there are a lot of good local companies that do knock doors. So those guys are probably most likely good guys. So the best way to watch yourself, I always tell people, is to call. Say, if Mr. Smith comes to the door, hey, you like him. He seems pretty legit. You know, he's out of O'Fallon. He does work at this company. Ask him who his vendor is and who his rep is. And he hopefully should tell you. And you call up at that vendor and say, listen, how long has this company been with you? And that's really, because otherwise those out-of-town guys will use local numbers. They will use P.O. boxes. They'll change their license plates. They're really good about, they're really slick and pretty sophisticated about changing their stuff, making it really, you know, making it look legit as possible. And that's why sometimes they'll cling on to another company, a younger company, you know, a guy who hasn't been through this before. You know, they'll jump onto one of them and promise him that company the world. Use and abuse them.
So they're good at even selling guys like you that aren't savvy.
Yeah, they'll call and say, look, man, we can get you X amount of jobs and you'll get this. And, you know, and the next thing you know, they're gone.
Wow.
You know, so they're pretty slick out there. So please beware of that. That's probably my biggest thing.
You said that, and I appreciate you saying this because, like I say in my lives for you and everyone else, like ophthalmology associates, that those guys would never say they're the only good eye doctors. You'd never say you're the only good roofer or exterior guy.
No, plenty of good guys.
But why better? Why Triton over some of the other guys who are also legit?
Well, you know, I've got over 20 some odd years in customer service, and I always put that first. And I'm not out there making this a numbers game. I really believe in each customer, making them a friend, approaching it that way, making long-term relationships. And we treat every customer like they're my best friend. I approach it that way. And customer service all the way through. And we only take on so many people a year because I just want to keep that integrity. And I'm not going to go out and hire and try, you know, I have 150 jobs and take 6 months to get to you and hold your money and stuff like that. So I don't believe in any of that. It just goes against every grain of my body. So I just from being in the hospitality industry before I got into the roofing, and it transfers over. So I think that's why I'm completely honest, completely straightforward. And you'll love my team, my guys I've had forever, you know, so I know what to expect. I know what I can give you.
So we all watched the news last night. A lot of us experienced it last night. But how bad was it as someone in the business?
It was pretty bad. Some of those that came up out of St. Charles, those were huge. I don't know if you saw. Those are about the size of a softball.
Now, what will that do to a roof?
It'll demolish it. I mean, it really trashed it. Especially people's cars.
Yeah.
Which is not something we do. But, I mean, it'll be a different claim for some of you out there. Well, you know, because I do get those calls like, hey, it happened to my car. Unfortunately, it's not something we do. There'll be two different adjusters on that. So with that being said, but it'll definitely put holes through skylights, which is, you know, I've seen it come through skylights. I've seen if they had strong enough wind, it'll come actually through a roof. You know, if they have 3/8 on there, which is a thin plywood or deck sheathing. I've seen it just tear up a home.
Yeah.
You won't even recognize it. So it depends how fast and how hard and how how hard the ice was.
Yeah, good information. It was really, really good. I'm very glad you came in. So if you want to reach out to Tim, which I can't recommend highly enough, if you have damage, you're afraid. Look, most people aren't going to get on a roof. And having been on a roof, like I said, when I was 19, 20 years old, don't get on the roof. Call Tim before you call the insurance company. 314-717-1159. Online at triton-stl.com. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Attorney Brad Young joins us. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Dave.
So, quite an opinion by the judge in the Fannie Willis case. I like this guy. I mean, he seems like a real thinker and a fair guy. Why don't you sum up for the listeners what he had to say?
He does. He in this case, the judge in this Fannie Willis situation, essentially did what I call splitting the baby, a la Solomon from the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And what he did was, is he goes through a 26-page opinion. I read the whole thing. And he goes through and he outlines all the evidence of impropriety between Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade. And then at some point, he reaches this conclusion. He says that even though there's no direct evidence of an impropriety, well, which I'm not really sure of that, because Fannie Willis's friend testified that the two, that Willis and Wade, were dating before the appointment, which would be an actual conflict of interest. But he says the prevalence of the evidence is that there's not an actual conflict. There's only the appearance. And because of that, one of the two have to go. Either Nathan Wade has to resign or Fannie Willis has to resign. But both of them can't stay. Now, in the last 15 minutes or so, Nathan Wade came out and said that he is stepping down as a special prosecutor. So in this instance, Fannie Willis gets to appoint a new prosecutor. Here's the part that I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And you read through this decision, he goes, and the judge in this case goes to great lengths to point out that under Georgia law, a prosecutor must recuse themselves even if there is an appearance of impropriety. So what I don't understand is how you can find that both Willis and Wade had the appearance of impropriety, but only one of them has to go. Mm. In your classic conflict of interest case, when there's a conflict with attorneys, everybody's got to go. I mean, it's not that you get to pick and choose. If there's a conflict with two or three attorneys, everybody has the conflict. Everybody has to go. All the parties have to get new attorneys. So I'm not exactly sure how you split that baby, but mm-hmm. that's what he did. And I think your classic example of a decision that no one's happy with is probably the best decision. That probably applies here.
You know, Brad, what's really interesting is, as a lawyer and a former litigator myself, I just called it the Fannie Willis case. That is some dark genius on the part of the Trump team, because we're forgetting that this is a case against Donald Trump and co-conspirators, and we're all focused on Fannie Willis.
Oh, exactly. And she made the point, and I know you watched some of her testimony, mm-hmm. but she said, this is not about me. But yet in the court of public opinion, it was about her. It was about Fannie Willis. And she became the star of salaciousness, which, by the way, it takes a lot to out salacious Donald Trump.
If
that phrase can be used that way. Mm-hmm. And yet she did that here, and it was all to Trump's benefit. It was a brilliant stroke of, as President Bush used to say, strategery.
Yes, yes. And so the Supreme Court has given us some advice on politicians and being able to block people on social media.
Yeah, and in the second instance within the last 2 weeks, the Supreme Court has issued a unanimous decision. Now, again, this one was very easy to call. I talked about it on At Your Service a long time. But basically, politicians who intermingle their personal social media accounts with their public service and when they're elected officials, you cannot block individuals from dissing you on social media if you're in part using it for a public purpose. Mm-hmm. And so to me, this was a no-brainer, and the court reached the right decision.
And overall, what do you make of the TikTok situation legally?
Wow. Boy, that takes a long time. And I know we're on the clock here, but there are going to be a lot of First Amendment challenges. The question, it really all comes down to this. When you have a spitting contest between mm-hmm. the First Amendment and national security, who prevails? Mm-hmm. And we just don't know the answer to that. But that's really, when you boil it all down, That's what it comes down to, because there's clearly First Amendment implications for banning an entire media platform. On the other hand, the national security issues are well documented. They're not really refutable in any clear way. And so when you've got that spitting contest, who prevails? Boy, we just don't know the answer to that.
All right, buddy. You're the best. Have a great weekend, Brad.
My pleasure.